offering a loving pranams at Bhagwan's lotus feet. The listeners, we welcome you to this week's episode of Shravanam, Mananam, Nididhyasanam. As always, this is Prem from Team Radio Sai, and with me is Brother Hari Shankar. If you've been following us regularly, we completed the 7th discourse last week of the 1991 Summer Course series. The 6th and 7th discourse was about the Prashnopanishad, and the 8th discourse is also about the Prashnopanishad, because the Upanishad itself is based on a series of questions the disciples ask sage Pipilada, and Swami is discussing those questions over these 3 discourses. Before we go into what Swami spoke in the last discourse, probably to start with a short summary of what Swami said last discourse. Before we do that, I invite Brother Hari to join all of us. Sairam Hari.
Sairam Prem. Good evening.
And the discourse which we had last week, the last couple of weeks which we were discussing, a very, very beautiful discourse. And the flow was very beautiful. And even though we were enjoying it through the course of the discourse, I think the way it ended, the way Swami himself summarized the whole thing towards the end in the last 5 minutes, it was a very complete discourse in that sense.
Yeah.
And looking at it from the point of view of the various schools of Indian scriptures and all that, it covered a lot of, it started with the understanding of creation itself. Then there was the aspect of karma in it. There was aspect of doing things within the bounds of the scriptures, and what would that give you? Then how do you go beyond that to release yourself from the cycle of birth and death? And then leading on to how every action is accounted and accounted for, and you have to answer for that. And then slowly leading on to devotion, which was very much the concept of which Swami began the discourse. It was a very beautifully flowing discourse, right?
Yeah, and many commentaries actually call the third question of the Prashnopanishad as being like one of the most profound ones. And Swami addressed it as saying that the devotee is seeking guidance as to how to come out of the vicious circle of birth and death.
Right.
Yeah, so as you rightly said, like Swami goes like very deep into this question by first addressing like how does the creation itself get, how does it get created? So he says the manas, it's the desire through which the whole world comes into being, and you as a person, right? So that the manas creates the body, and the prana enters that body, and that's how the person is born. So the manas, the desire is, that is paramount.
Right.
And that is the cause of the being. And that Swami delineates like how karma, that long poem that Swami talks about. In that Swami speaks about also the garland of, he says that every person, every child that is born, it is not born with a necklace or any other jewelry of gold, silver, but it is definitely born with the necklace of the consequences of past actions.
Right.
He says that is the gift that Brahma gives every living being as it enters the world. But I think one of the most important concepts which Swami spoke about in that is to what extent is every being responsible for being, able to escape or come out of this cycle of birth or death. Or said in a better fashion, like how to realize, how every being can come to realize its own divinity, innate divinity.
Swami was, as you were saying, Swami was talking about karma, and the other important thing was about thoughts. Swami was saying that the entire creation is born out of sankalpas.
Sankalpa.
That's the summary which Swami gave in the end. So in the middle part when Swami was talking especially about that Uttarayanam and Dakshinayanam, Swami was saying that, you could have your... You could have perfection in your actions, in the form of you constantly doing righteous actions. But Swami is saying that even that, if the mind is not turned towards the ultimate goal, if the mind is tuned towards the benefits of those good actions, Swami is saying that you will achieve probably an intermediate heaven, sort of a situation, where Swami said it's like being elected to a post.
Yes.
That you stay there till that stipulated time, and then you come back to this point.
Yeah.
And if you want to release from this, as Swami was beautifully saying that, you you don't know where the beginning of the seed is, but you always know how to put an end to the cycle of the seed.
Yes.
You just have to put it in your mouth and chew. And Swami is saying, similarly, the way you use your, direct your thoughts in such a manner that this can be brought about. Swami is saying that is turning it towards the ultimate goal. And that is nothing but the what is described in the scriptures as Uttarayana, or going towards the inner divinity. And Swami was saying that, you know, but you still, even though there is this thing, you know, you, what you do with your actions and what you do with your thoughts, both are in a way documented. And then Swami went on to that part where Swami spoke about the pranas. How, Udana Prana is the place where your actions are documented. Right? And I think this is a question which many people ask. You know, how much of your actions and choices are governed by your past actions, consequences, and how much is within the within your ability in the present moment to steer it away or steer it in a different direction.
Yes.
And I think more or less the answer which Swami gave was that you always have the opportunity. You always, that was the encouraging reply which Pipilada gives, that you can, everybody has the ability. Swami said that every jiva which is created is given the ability to put an end to this cycle.
Right.
Apart from God's grace, there is that individual effort which has to be put in and which can be achieved.
Yes, we kind of understood this as like that the past, it throws up the situations which we find ourselves in now, but the response to that is what dictates what happens subsequently. So I think that's why we were saying that it is always our responsibility to keep looking for the right kind of company, the right satsangam, the right kind of learning, right kind of jnana, which will then prepare us for, you know, the giving the right response in such a way that we do not perpetuate situation we found ourselves in.
Right.
And as towards the end, I think Swami gave us the ultimate technique, which is to be completely devoted to God.
Right.
And again, that's a theme that was spoken about right at the beginning. The whole, I think the whole discussion of the Uttarayana and the Dakshinayana, and the discussions that it actually led to when we answered a listener's query, regarding what path of sadhana is important. I think the conclusion we all came to was that the earnestness with which we take upon that particular path of sadhana, and not just the earnestness but the final goal, like if we keep the goal as God himself, and not some, as you mentioned, some intermediate goal. Any intermediate goal will lead to a time-bound result.
Right.
But it is, when you seek the eternal, what you get is eternal. And then Swami again brought up karma, So it is, and the effects of karma, Swami said, are burned away by the fire of devotion. So that is a theme.
Exactly. I think more or less Swami was saying that the most effective method, Swami was talking of different methods.
Yes.
And towards the end, Swami is saying the most effective method is the ability to do all actions as offerings to God. And that really shows, you know, how important it is the act of an avatar manifesting in the midst. Because most of it becomes so much easy when you're able to relate to divinity in a personal manner. Be it Rama, Krishna, or Swami. It is very easy for us to, I mean, even we are, that experience is even within our reach.
Yes.
You know, it's easier for us to now think that I'm doing whatever I'm doing as an offering to Swami. If you were to remove Swami away from the picture, I wonder if we would be able to act in the same manner, saying that I'm offering all my actions to Lord Rama or all my actions to Lord Krishna. It is much more easier when you have lived with Swami and, you know, you've seen the benefit of doing things as an offering. When you've seen the benefit of undergoing life as everything as a prasadam from Swami.
Yes, and I think definitely one stops analyzing, you know, like main thing is we get stopped when, you know, you look at the scriptures, you start analyzing, why should I offer things to God? But when love flows in, like that abstraction, all that just flows out. So it becomes very simple, you know. Like you don't think about why do I have to do it. It's like, you know, I will do it for Bhagwan.
In fact, on another program we're talking about what Swami says regarding meditation. In the Dhyanavahini, Swami makes a very beautiful point. He says there are three types of meditation, sattvic, rajasic and tamasic. Right? And you're saying the tamasic kind of meditation is meditation, worship or japa, dhyana, all of that. Is when you are in danger, you start doing. Right? When there is some impending doom, you start doing japam or dhyanam or something like that. And rajasic is when you have some goal in mind and you do.
Yes.
Even if it is spiritual goal. Even I want to become a spiritual evolved person. I want an experience of mindless state or whatever it is. But Swami is saying the sattvic type of meditation is that you are so fond of that form and name that you do it only because it gives you joy to think and contemplate about that name.
Right.
Swami is saying that that is the highest. So even in the path of meditation, even in the dhyana marga, if you are able to sit and think of that deity which you are meditating upon with love, spontaneously, and believing that the act of just thinking of this Lord is enough for me. I am not looking at the benefit that comes out of it.
Yes.
So I'm saying that that's the best way of doing dhyana.
Yeah. I remember in my days as a student, my engineering days, I so badly wanted to, you know, come here and become Swami's student and all those aspirations I had. So I used to very strictly follow, you know, whatever spiritual injunctions were there. I would try and follow to the extent possible, and I discovered somewhere, you know, meditation. So, you know, whatever little I could read, you know, as a youngster, you do whatever you can, right? But you do it with a lot of verve, with a lot of spirit. So, somebody, in somewhere I'd read about how you can do the meditation on Gayatri, right? So, they, as a youngster, I'd been taught that you can visualize the Devi on a lotus and things like that. So, I was trying to do this and I just couldn't, you know, somewhere the mind started questioning, what is this thing you're imagining, like, you know, some lady on a lotus, how will it help you and things like that. So, after some time, obviously, I got totally disenchanted. But I remember I came to Prashanthi Nilayam, sitting for darshan one day, and if you remember those times, you know, so early morning darshan, Swami would give darshan, and there would be that intermediate period before the bhajans would, you know, start. So, Swami would be in the interview room for giving interviews. At that time, all the devotees, many of the devotees would go out to have breakfast or do their other things and then come back for bhajan. So, the mandir would be empty. One such day, like, the interview got over, like, well before time. And Swami came out. He walked out. I think there were some students from Alike, you know, Swami was speaking to them. And he turned all of a sudden, like, there were maybe three or four people seated at that time, like very close to where Swami was. He just turned and I remember he stared at me for a very long time. You know, I can, even now when I think about it, I can feel his eyes boring into me, you know. So much so that I almost jumped out of my skin, right? that was the experience I had. And as if, you know, just at that moment, suddenly the words came out, Swami, I said. At that moment, as if the spell broke, you know, Swami suddenly just turned and walked away. There's nothing, you know, Swami neither spoke to me nor called me for Pad Namaskar, nothing. But that few seconds, when I went back to college, it became so very easy to meditate on that. Even now, it's like instantaneous. I can forget the end, everything else, just thinking about that special moment. Yeah.
Right. So I think with that we'll go to the next one. Swami concluded the last discourse by saying that we have a cultural program waiting. Let's conclude with, let's hurry up and go for that.
Yeah.
But Swami is going to continue that discussion between Sage Pipalada and his disciples in the next discourse, the eighth discourse in the series. So we'll begin this discourse today, dear listeners. We'll start with the first clip. We'll hopefully have two clips today. We'll have two short clips. So this is the starting of the eighth discourse.
Manasu malinyamulanella mattu varake. Manasu malinyamulanella mattu vetti. Parama parishuddhi bhavamul patu kolapa. పరమ పరిశుద్ధ భావము పాదుకొలుప జ్ఞాన దృష్టియు నొసగి కాంతియున్న విశ్వమంతయు బ్రహ్మమై వెలుగు నిండు విశ్వమంతయు బ్రహ్మమై వెలుగు నిండు విశ్వమంతయు విశ్వమంతయు బ్రహ్మమై వెలుగు నిండు.
డిస్ట్రాయ్ అండ్ రిమూవ్ ఆల్ ది డర్ట్ ఇన్ ద మైండ్ అండ్ క్లీన్స్ యువర్ హార్ట్ అండ్ ఫిల్ ఇట్ విత్ ప్యూర్ ఫీలింగ్స్. If only you have the Jnana Drushti, the wisdom, vision, you will find the entire universe as Brahma himself.
Tattva merigina variki tapamu yela. Tattva merigina variki tapamu yela. సత్యమున్నట్టి వానికి సాధనేలా కళ్ళ కపటాలు లేకున్న క్రతువు ఏలా. కళ్ళ కపటాలు లేకున్న క్రతువు ఏలా. సత్యమును తెలుపు బాట సత్యమును తెలుపు బాట సత్యమును తెలుపు బాట ఈ సాయి మాట సత్యమును తెలుపు బాట ఈ సాయి మాట.
For one who knows Tattvam, that principle itself, where is the need for doing penance? For one who is given to and dedicated to truth, where is the need for any special sadhana? For one who is free from all tricks and trickeries, where is the need for doing sacrifices? This is the world of Sai, which shows the path of truth.
జీవితమునకు జనన మరణములు సామాన్యమైన కర్మలు.
బర్త్ అండ్ డెత్ ఆర్ నేచురల్ యాక్టివిటీస్ ఇన్ లైఫ్.
జనన మరణముల యొక్క రహస్యమును చక్కగా గుర్తెరిగినటువంటి భార్గవుడు.
భార్గవ హూ వాంటెడ్ టు నో ద మిస్టరీ ఆఫ్ బర్త్ అండ్ డెత్.
ఉత్తరాయణ దక్షిణాయనం యొక్క రహస్యాన్ని కూడా నువ్వు చక్కగా గుర్తెరిగినటువంటి భార్గవుడు.
భార్గవ హూ న్యూ ది ఉత్తరాయణ ది నార్త్ వర్డ్ ట్రావెల్ అండ్ ది సౌత్ వర్డ్ ట్రావెల్ ఆఫ్ ద సన్.
శుక్లపక్షమి కృష్ణపక్షమి యొక్క రహస్యమును కూడా నువ్వు చక్కగా గుర్తించినటువంటి భార్గవుడు.
భార్గవ హూ న్యూ థరలీ ది సీక్రెట్స్ ఆఫ్ బ్రైట్ ఫోర్త్ నైట్ అండ్ డార్క్ ఫోర్త్ నైట్.
సంతృప్తి నుంది
హి వాస్ థరోలీ సాటిస్ఫైడ్.
పిప్పిలాదునకు నమస్కరించి
ఆఫర్డ్ సాల్యుటేషన్స్ టు పిప్పిలాద.
తన హృదయపూర్వకంగా కృతజ్ఞతను అప్పచెప్పి
అండ్ హి ఆఫర్డ్ హిస్ హార్ట్ టు హిమ్.
ఆనందమును అనుభవించుచుండగా
హి వాస్ ఎంజాయింగ్ ద బ్లిస్ సుప్రీం.
గర్గి వంశీయుడైనటువంటి
ద వన్ హూ బిలాంగ్ టు ది
సౌరాయణి అనేటువంటి నాలుగో బ్రహ్మచారి అక్కడికి ఏతించి
ది సౌద్యామణి ది ఫోర్త్ వన్ అప్రోచ్.
స్వామి ప్రాణికోటి
స్వామి
నిద్రించుచుండు సమయమున నిద్రించువారు ఎవరు?
స్వామి వెన్ ఏ హ్యూమన్ బీయింగ్ ఈజ్ స్లీపింగ్ హూ ఈజ్ ఇట్ దట్ ఈజ్ స్లీపింగ్?
అందులో మేల్కొన్నటువంటి వారెవరు?
Who is it that is awake in him?
Andulo kalalu ganeetunti varevaru?
Who is it that is dreaming in him?
Manasulo neenamai ఆనందంతో తన్మయత్తమై జీవితాన్నే మరచి కేవలము సంతృప్తుడయ్యినటువంటి వాడెవరు?
ద వన్ హూ హాస్ బికమ్ వన్ విత్ ద మైండ్ అండ్ సుప్రీమ్లీ ఎంజాయింగ్ ది బ్లిస్ఫుల్ స్లీప్, హూ ఇస్ దాట్?
ఈ రహస్యములను నాకు తెలిపి మనశ్శాంతి చేకూర్చమని ప్రార్థించాడు.
కైండ్లీ టీచ్ మీ ద మిస్టరీ అండ్ ది సీక్రెట్స్ ఆఫ్ ఆల్ దీస్ థింగ్స్ అండ్ గివ్ మీ ది సాటిస్ఫాక్షన్ స్వామి, హీ ప్రేడ్.
ప్రాణి నిద్రించు సమయమున ఈ ప్రాణ లక్షణములను ఎక్కడ చేర్చుచున్నాడు?
వెన్ ఏ లివింగ్ బీయింగ్ ఈ స్లీపింగ్, వేర్ ఈస్ హీ డూయింగ్ దిస్ ప్రొటెక్షన్ ఆఫ్ ది క్వాలిటీస్ ఆఫ్ ప్రాణ?
So that's the beginning of the discourse, and I think that clip is filled with questions which Swami is going to answer in the next following minutes in the discourse. But it's, you know, it's quite exciting, the questions which Swami raised in that clip, isn't it?
Yes, and as also the, I think the poem that begins, right, like the right at the beginning, I think like in all these discourses, the poems that sort of the poem that he recites at the beginning of the discourse, that contains the right. kernel of
the entire discourse.
Yeah, what is going to be spoken about at the end of the discourse. As always, we have the question like, how is this poem, how is it even relevant, or right. how does it come out of...
I remember
of
the, in the sixth discourse, the poem was about service, paropakara artham idam shariram. In the last discourse, it was about the sin never attaches itself to a devotee, like how the reflection of a person does not stick to the mirror.
Absolutely.
So now this is the padyam for this discourse.
Yes, because if you look at the question has everything to do with like the secrets of, you know, sleep, like like the different stages of sleep. Then who is the person who dreams? Who is awake? So these are the questions. But Swami's poem speaks about removing the impurities of the mind, like
right,
keeping your feelings pure, and also addresses this question like a puzzle, you know, why does a self-realized person need penance, and of what need is spiritual effort to one who adheres to the truth, and does a guileless person need to do sacrifices and rituals? Like, so I think it is important now that we also become wise to, you know, the relevance of the poem to the rest of the discourse, and that is a framework, in fact, of the entire discourse. So, I think it's important to note down even right now what is it that Swami is like perhaps going to speak about. So, the impurities of the mind and filling the heart with pure feelings, as also these paradoxical questions. Does a self-realized person need penance? You know, what need is spiritual effort to one who adheres to truth? And does a guileless person need to do sacrifices and rituals? I remember this last statement, no? Does a guileless person, regarding this, we had spoken about, I think, two segments prior.
Right.
In the previous discussions, it came up in the context of what are the qualities that are required of a devotee, you know, of of an aspirant, a spiritual aspirant. And it did speak about meditation, and that you should have inquiry into the self, like these aspects. And in between, the Upanishad speaks about how the person should be completely free of deceit and manipulative tendencies. So the guileless person. So here is Swami asking very profound question, that does a guileless person need to do sacrifices and rituals?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, if you just analyze that, you know, what does a person who is using guile and, you know, his intelligence probably to get the better of some other person, or, you know, cheat the other person, whatever it is, you know, all of these acts come purely out of the feeling that, you know, here I am and here I have to gather whatever I can from the rest of the world.
Yes.
Or I need to get better than so-and-so who is a distinct entity.
Yes.
And I mean, whenever I talk, I mean, read Swami's discourses or listen to Swami's discourses, when Swami is talking about goodness, if you can define the idea of goodness in one sentence in a practical way, I think it's what, you know, it's quoted in the Bible, it's quoted in many other scriptures.
Mm.
do unto others what you wish that others do unto you.
Yes.
It's nothing but the idea of empathy.
Correct.
You know, the very fact that you don't want to hurt another person, because if something similar is to happen to me, I will be hurt. It cannot but come out of an idea of oneness.
Right.
So the idea of being guileless itself should be arising from somewhere inherent idea of there is oneness and there is, you know, I and the other person around.
Absolutely.
Is one.
Yes.
Right.
This is what I like, you know, it's very nice to actually go over what we said at that time. And I recall we brought up the, you know, the words from the Bhrigavalli, or sorry, from the Anandavalli.
Mm-hmm.
So the Anandavalli, very clearly it states that at the moment where you conceive of yourself as a person that is separate from the creation,
okay.
So right at that moment, the first primal emotion that that arises in you is the emotion of fear.
Right.
And once you have fear, like, and then what you seek is survival. And then in when you're seeking that survival, the methods that you adopt are these, you know,
right.
That you try, you lie to others, you try to deceive or you manipulate, like. So the Upanishad, like, very beautifully it shows that the primal, you know, right at the root of it all is that fear that comes from that feeling of separateness.
Right.
So that's why the many masters, when we talk about them, we always say that they were childlike, that innocence, purity,
right.
That complete trust and love of all beings around them. But it comes from being very aware of, you know, being one with the creation.
There is an injunction in with us. It says that fear is born out of duality. Dvitiyat bhayam uchyate, something like that. There's a statement.
Yes.
It says that all fear is born out of duality.
Right.
So when it's also well connected. That's what Swami is saying, that if you are able to purify your heart, because that's what Swami says, remove the impurities of the mind and fill your heart with supremely pure feelings. The moment you embark on this process of purifying your heart and, you know, try to bring in that idea of goodness in you, you automatically will have to set these things right.
Absolutely.
The fear has to go.
Yes.
And fear has to go, duality has to go. And if that duality has to go, this feeling of empathy should become so strong that, as I was saying, that you start seeing everybody's pain as your own. As Swami, I think, says in the conversation to Dr. Hislop. And he keeps saying, Swami, what is this idea of unity? What is, you know, what happens after a person realizes? Swami says, that's all it is. I mean, if what is this realization if it is not you walking on the road and feeling the pain of every person who you come across?
Profound.
That's all it is. You will feel everybody's feeling, you will feel everybody's thoughts and, you know, emotions.
Right. I think that in itself is a spiritual effort, you know, as a sadhana. I think we can watch ourselves, that the number of times in a day when we do this, you know, when we, our actions are totally guided by that feeling that I want to dominate someone else, or I want to, you know, get something out of that person. So I hide back something of mine, like I keep, you know, something to myself and then try to manipulate that person. And the Upanishads are very clear. They say you could be doing lot of meditation and lot of good deeds, but this has to be, you know, you have to tick this off.
Right.
So the number of times we become aware of where we are doing this kind of behavior, I think it automatically, we become aware of how much we consider ourselves separate from the others. How much we fear each other.
So they say the Brahma Sutra start with Athato Brahma Jignasa.
Yes.
That Athato has in it all the religious scriptures and all the dictums which we call as ideas of morality or moral living in all cultures and all civilizations. It's all put into that. Unless you master that. And as you're saying, that childless guilelessness, it's not guilelessness which is achieved merely through effort, but it's a state of a very nascent innocence.
Right.
When you achieve that, then you're ready to ask the question of who, what is Brahman.
And, and while that is a very ideal state, like if we look at our everyday behavior, we will, you know, fall short of this. But I think the degree to which we become aware that we are falling short, and last time also we discussed this, the degree to which we are very authentic with ourselves about where we are falling short. I think that itself does the magic.
Right.
Yes.
So I think we'll go to the answer, because you've left the listeners and ourselves in suspense. Because Swami's asked these couple of very, very, very profound questions. So we'll just recap the questions which Swami raised in that previous clip. Swami says, you know, the student comes up and asks, when the countless beings of the world sleep, who sleeps in reality? Who is awake then? And who dreams? Who forgets the body and mind and gets immersed in the awareness in a blissful state? When a living being sleeps, how are they able to sustain the life force? So these are the questions that the student is asking. And I think Swami hinted this to an extent in the previous discourse, where Swami was saying that the way sankalpas are connected to creation, sleep is created to connected to dreams.
Right.
So I'm saying all dreams arise from sleep, like all creation arises from thoughts.
Right. So the questions are essentially like, who sleeps and why a person, so-called person, is sleeping, who is awake?
Right.
And in that case, who is the one who is dreaming? Oh God, these are really interconnected. No? And then who forgets the mind, body and mind, gets immersed in the awareness in a blissful state? Oh, these are really profound questions. I think like, we should listen to what Bhagwan has to say in reply.
So we'll go to the next clip in that discourse.
Appudu Pippiladudu Sauryayani Surudu Astaminchinappudu Tana yokka kiranamulanu Tejastunundi imuchi Rendavu dinamu udayinche samayamunanu ఆ కిరణములు తిరిగి తనలో చేరి అనుభవించుతున్నట్టుగా మానవుడు నిద్రించు సమయమున తన యొక్క ఇంద్రియ వ్యాపారమును మనస్సునందు చేర్చుతున్నాడు.
సౌస్యాయిని, జస్ట్ యాజ్ ద సన్ వెన్ హీ సెట్స్ విత్డ్రాస్ ఆల్ హిస్ రేస్ అండ్ గెట్ దెమ్ మర్జ్డ్ ఇన్ టు హిమ్, సో ఆల్సో వెన్ ఎ హ్యూమన్ బీయింగ్ ఈజ్ స్లీపింగ్, all the senses get merged into the mind.
Anduvalane nidravasthayendu manavudu chudalekapothunnadu.
That is the reason why man has not been able to
maatadalekapothunnadu,
and he has not been able to talk.
Vinalekapothunnadu,
he cannot hear either.
Yochinchalekapothunnadu,
he cannot think.
Karanam emiti? Indriyam yokka vyaparam anta ikkadanu మనస్సులో ఇమిడి ఉంటుంది.
వాట్ ఈస్ ది రీజన్? ఆల్ ది యాక్టివిటీస్ ఆఫ్ ది సెన్సస్ హావ్ మర్జ్డ్ దెమ్సెల్వ్స్ ఇన్ మైండ్.
అయితే ఈ నిద్రావస్థ యందు పంచప్రాణములు పంచాగ్రులై మేలుకొని ఉంటున్నాయి.
బట్ ఇన్ దిస్ స్లీపింగ్ స్టేట్ దీస్ ఫైవ్ ప్రాణాస్ ఆర్ అవేక్ ఇన్ ద ఫారమ్ ఆఫ్ ఫైవ్ ఫైర్స్.
అక్కడ ఉచ్ఛ్వాస నిశ్వాసములు,
ద ఇన్హేలింగ్ అండ్ ఎక్సేలింగ్,
సాధారణమైనటువంటి యొక్క ప్రాణము చేత,
దే ఆర్ అసోసియేటెడ్ విత్ ది ఆర్డినరీ ప్రాణ,
సమానాది తత్వముల చేత,
అండ్ అసోసియేటెడ్ విత్ ది ప్రిన్సిపల్ ఆఫ్ సమాన,
ఈ యొక్క ఉచ్ఛ్వాసములు జరుగుతూ వస్తున్నాయి.
దిస్ బ్రీతింగ్ ఈజ్ గోయింగ్ ఆన్.
కనుక మానవుడు నిద్రించే సమయంలో మేల్కొన్నటువంటిది పంచప్రాణముల యొక్క పంచాగ్నులు.
వెన్ మ్యాన్ ఈజ్ స్లీపింగ్, ఇట్ ఈస్ ది ఫైవ్ ఫైర్స్ ఆఫ్ ఫైవ్ ప్రాణాస్ విచ్ ఆర్ అవేక్ ఇన్ మ్యాన్.
మానవుడి యొక్క నిద్రించు సమయమున ఆ హాయి, ఆనందము, ఆ సుఖమును అనుభవించేటువంటిది జీవుడే.
It is the jiva, the living being, who is enjoying all the bliss, all the happiness when he is asleep.
పూర్వపు జరిగినటువంటి దానిని ఇప్పుడు జరుగుతున్నటువంటి విషయాలను,
whatever has happened in the past and whatever is occurring at that point of time,
పూర్వము తాను చూచినటువంటివి ఇప్పుడు తాను చూచుతున్నటువంటివి,
whatever has seen in the past and whatever he was seeing then,
పూర్వం తాను అనుభవించినటువంటివి ఇప్పుడు తాను అనుభవించుతున్నటువంటివి,
వాట్ ఎవర్ హీ హాస్ ఎంజాయ్డ్ ఇన్ ద పాస్ట్ అండ్ వాట్ ఎవర్ హీ వాస్ ఎంజాయింగ్ దెన్,
ఇవన్నీ కూడాను కలల రూపము లోపల అనుభవిస్తున్నాడు మానవుడు.
ఆల్ దీస్ థింగ్స్ వర్ ఎంజాయ్డ్ బై మ్యాన్ ఇన్ డ్రీమ్.
ఇంతియే కాక అనేక జన్మముల యొక్క సంస్కారములు కూడాను తనలో ముద్రింపబడి ఉండటం చేత అవి కూడాను తనకు తెలియనటువంటి యొక్క స్వరూపములు కూడాను విషయములు కూడాను కలలో అనుభవించగలుగుతున్నాడు మానవుడు.
మ్యాన్ హెస్ ఆల్సో బీన్ ఎంజాయింగ్ ద కాన్సిక్వెన్సెస్ ఆఫ్ ఆల్ ద సంస్కారాస్ అక్యుమిలేటెడ్ ఓవర్ ఎ నంబర్ ఆఫ్ బస్ డ్యూరింగ్ ది డ్రీమ్ స్టేట్.
కనుక నిద్రించే సమయమునందు మేల్కొన్నటువంటిది పంచభూతములే.
వైల్ స్లీపింగ్ ఇట్ ఇస్ దిస్ ఫైవ్ ఎలిమెంట్స్ విచ్ ఆర్ అవే.
నిద్రావస్థలో ఉండేటువంటి యొక్క హాయిని ఆనందాన్ని సుఖాన్ని కూడా అనుభవించేటువంటిది జీవుడే.
ఇట్ ఈస్ ది జీవా హూ ఈస్ ఎంజాయింగ్ ఆల్ ద జాయ్ హ్యాపీనెస్ అండ్ బ్లిస్.
స్వప్నావస్థయందు సర్వమును తానే కల్పించుకొని
డ్యూరింగ్ ది డ్రీమ్ స్టేట్ హీ క్రియేట్స్ ఫర్ హిమ్సెల్ఫ్ ఆల్ ద
తనను తాను కూడా కల్పించుకొని
హీ క్రియేట్స్ హిమ్సెల్ఫ్ ఆల్సో ఫర్ హిమ్సెల్ఫ్.
కృత్రిమైనటువంటి భావములను అనుభవిస్తూ ఉంటున్నాడు తానే.
He is enjoying feelings in an artificial way in the dream state.
ee annintikudunu manase moola karanam.
For all these things the root cause is mind.
Manayeva manushyanam karanam bandhamocheyo. Ee rendinti endukudunu swapnamunaku nidraku gaadhamainatunti yokka aanandamunaku moola karanamu manase.
It is the mind which is responsible for dreams in the dream state, for joy in the deep sleep state.
So I think that was a power-packed clip. You know, so many beautiful answers. In fact, Swami was answering almost all those questions that he raised.
Mm-hmm.
Though probably he'll be explaining it in the course of the discourse. Very, very succinctly answered all those questions, you know, with direct explanations.
Yeah. And Swami very beautifully describes like what happens when we first, you know, we lie down and go to sleep, right? We enter the initial stages of sleep, and Swami says it is like the sun, it, when it sets, it appears to withdraw all the rays. Into itself, right? So it, and so the it's so the it description what we understand from that is all the senses have been withdrawn, right? And in fact, I just going through the translation of the Upanishads to just see like how they speak about this particular section. So they describe it as if they describe the man as a city. You know, an allegory is that the man is like a city and the city has gone to sleep.
Okay. Right?
And but however, at all times there are five fires that are burning, like throughout the night.
Mm-hmm.
So there are five fires that are burning. So that is how we are asked to visualize that even when the senses have completely are dormant,
mm-hmm.
and at that time, even then the pranas, the five life forces are still burning, they're still active.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so because the senses have receded, that is why Swami says that you don't see that particular person's, he can't see, or he or she can't talk, hear or taste, right? They're all dormant. But the what we should remember is that the person as such has not gone out of existence, because the prana, as has been spoken about in so many of the Upanishads that we've discussed so far, that how it is prana that is primal. So even when the senses appear to have disappeared, as long as the prana is there, the life forces are active, that person is active, the person right. exists as an individual, right? Mm-hmm. So again, there's a very nice description of the role of samana. So it likens samana to a priest, mm-hmm. like a priest who is offering oblation to two fires at the same time.
Okay.
So this is a way of explaining like how the samana, it is taking care of both the inhalation mm-hmm. and exhalation at the same time, and that's what keeps the body going, you know, the person is alive
right.
because of samana.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And also like the it talks about the role of udana over here.
Mm-hmm.
And even as Swami right. Speaks over here, his Swami is saying that how the mind, it relives, you know, past and present sights and experiences. I found this very interesting. The Upanishad speaking about how the mind creates dreams from what it has seen. Right? The Swami delineates here maybe the everyday sights and experiences.
Right.
And then Swami says even impressions from so many past births which have kind of receded to the back of the person's memory. Yeah, they're not in the present consciousness, but he says that these suddenly intrude into a person's dreams. And according to the Upanishads, it is the Udana that then carries, you know, these impressions, the sacrifices that are made every day in deep sleep, it says, it takes these to the Brahman, it carries it to the Brahman.
Mm-hmm.
So the last discourse, you know, we kind of, when we were towards the fag end of the discourse, we discussed that the role of Udana, one of the vital layers, was to carry the, at the end of one's life, the consequences of one's deeds, whether meritorious or not. It carries the soul along with these meritorious deeds, right, to the whatever comes next. But here we see that it is actually, the Upanishad says, happening on a daily basis.
Mm.
On every single day. And it also, in one sense, says that when you go into the state of deep sleep, you kind of withdrawn everything, the senses, etc. You're in that state of deep sleep, you're almost equated to Brahman. It's
right.
Like you carry yourself into the state of Brahman and then wake up, you know, wake back from that on a daily basis.
Right.
And I am reminded of what Swami said, you know, that sleep is a short death,
right,
and death is a long sleep.
Right.
I think it's a clear reference, you know, in the Upanishads that what we thought happens at the fag end of one's life is in fact happening every single day when we enter into sleep and then when we wake up.
Mm.
Like it's like almost every day is a new life, you know.
Achha, I think there's a beautiful quote by Ramana Maharishi.
Mm.
He says the essence of all the efforts that we do in the spiritual field is to bring to the waking state that deep sleep state.
Right.
That experience of that deep sleep state, to bring it to the waking state at every moment.
Right.
That's all is, you know, what we're trying to do.
Yeah.
Because I think even in the Bhagavatam, it is spoken of the sleep the jiva experiences is similar to that pralaya which happens at the end of time.
Oh.
That withdrawal of all creation into itself.
Right.
And then recreating it.
Yes.
You know, he says that's precisely what happens when the Lord himself does that.
Right.
When he sleeps and he wakes up. That's the description it gives. But it's very beautiful. Swami says that this whole experience is happening through the individual.
Right.
So that jivatma, or, you know, that thing which separates him from God is still there in its experiencing.
Yeah.
And that's why Swami is saying that, you know, it's the same person who is first of all dreaming about the things which have happened and the things which have happened in the past.
Yeah.
And I think it's a very important thing. And many times, even you know, even in regular parlance, we say that sleep over a problem.
Mm.
You know, if you have some confusion, sleep over it.
Mm.
And many times you see that when you wake up in the morning, you have certain amount of clarity about it.
Yes, yes.
And of course, the neuroscientists give a different explanation for that.
Mm.
They say a lot of remapping happens in your brain when you go to sleep.
Reorganization.
Right? And a lot of clarity comes chemically and biologically.
Yeah.
not talking about anything else. Yeah. But in many ways, when Swami says that a lot of impressions from past come.
Mm.
See, many times our issue with problems which we face today is we don't know where it is coming from. What is the source, or, you know, why are we going through that?
Yeah.
So probably in that dream state when Swami says that you start getting, you know, you probably get references from your past.
Right.
Where you are able to put in place some of the things you're going through and you kind of, if not consciously, subconsciously, you kind of come to deal with or accept some of these situations.
Yeah. And very interestingly, you know, the mind has a very unique ability to put together a story. And I remember when maybe I was 13 or 14 years old, right? I had a very weird dream that suddenly, as we were sleeping in the middle of the night, burglars have broken into our house. And then I, you know, wake everybody up and say we've got to, you know, fight these burglars. And so all of us are putting up a very good fight against the burglars. And all of a sudden, you know, in the dream, I see that a burglar has picked up a, like an iron rod and has hit me at exactly at the nape of my neck with very hard.
Mm-hmm.
At that moment, you know, with the shock of that event happening in the dream, I wake up. And when I wake up, I realize that what has been happening is when I was sleeping, I've shifted a little up and one of the rods on that in that cot,
right.
My neck has been resting on that for so long, it's been paining.
Right.
And I'm deep in sleep, right? Mm. And so the mind has put together such an elaborate story, okay, so that I wake up and do, you know, ease the body's pain. Mm. It was fantastic, even when I just think about it, I just think of like how the mind can so easily, very easily, it can put together a very, very coherent narrative of what is happening.
Mm. Yeah, even as you were saying this, I was reminded when we were in school, you know, we all have these bells being rung at the end of a period, right? So I think sometime when I was in 7th or 8th grade or something, they got this automatic bells installed in our school.
Right.
So it was kind of attached to a clock.
Hmm.
So it would go off like an alarm,
hmm.
not like somebody coming and physically ringing the bell or pressing a button.
Timed.
Right. Hmm. So we could set our watches to that, the bell.
Right.
I think it was my 9th standard, a little later. So it would be, you know, one thing which we would do sitting in the back benches. So when it is closer to the end of the period, we will start a countdown. Right? So 10, 9, 8, and it'll ring exactly when you come to 0.
Hmm.
So we were very fascinated with that because it was a freshly installed system and all that. And I remember many times in my sleep, dreaming of that experience, much later. Even after I'd come off school, I would be sitting and I'll have the same dream of sitting with friends and doing that countdown. And you won't believe it, Ari, at 0, the alarm will go off.
Oh.
Many, many times it has happened.
Oh my God.
It's so fascinating how does this mind, you know, play up that dream so precisely in that time, right?
Hard, absolutely. Yeah. Right. I was reading, you know, something online a few months back, in fact, I was so very fascinated. A person, he describes an event that happened in his life. So he says that one day, you know, he was a student.
Okay.
Right, and it is very last semester at the college, and he was just walking back to his dorm, and at that moment he crossed the path of a football player, and whatever reason that football player was so very angered that this person crossed his path, and he assaulted him, and during that fight that ensued, this person, the narrator, he fell to the ground and fell unconscious.
Okay.
So he says that now when he fell unconscious, what he saw, right? So he says that he went through this experience that he's at that age, right? So now he progresses in that age.
Mm-hmm.
He says, I meet a young lady and then I woo her and then actually get married to that lady. I beget a daughter.
Mm-hmm.
Then after 2 years, I beget a son, right? And I enjoy, playing with my son and all that. And he says, one day in the dream, all this is happening.
Okay.
That one day I come back from work, right? I come back home. And it's a little late in the night and I'm sitting there all alone. All my family members have retired. And he's watching a lampshade. And as he's watching that lampshade, suddenly it strikes to him that there's something wrong about it. The geometry, you know, he says, the kind of shadow that it threw, there's something wrong in it. And he says, again in the dream, this is still in the dream, he looks at it and he gets so very fascinated by trying to figure out what is wrong. And he says the whole night he doesn't sleep. Next day, you know, when everybody is awake, he's still not slept, he's not feeling hungry, he's transfixed by that shadow of that lamp. He's just watching. And he says he goes through 3 days of watching that. His neighbors, his wife, everybody is troubled. The wife, in fact, takes the kids and goes to her parents' home. And then there, he says that in the dream, there's somebody who's trying to come and, you know, bang on the door to take him away to a psych ward or whatever. And at that moment, it strikes to him that the whole thing is wrong. He says, like, he realizes the lamp is wrong because it's a dream. He says the wife is a dream. The kids that he bore, they're all a dream. And even as this happens, he wakes up into the real world.
Mm-hmm.
In the world that he was where he fell onto the pavement. And when he comes to, he sees that the paramedics are all there, that there's a lot of blood that he's lost, and he's taken. And then when he finds out how much time had elapsed, he says it was about 10 seconds.
My God.
You know, in that whole time, he has undergone maybe about, you know, more than 10 years of existence. Mm. And that is the capacity of the mind to weave stories.
Right. And to completely warp time altogether.
Absolutely. It's mind-blowing. You know, when I read that for a long time, you know, I almost questioned my own reality.
Exactly. When that's possibly, you know, the most famous dream analogy which the scriptures talk of, Janaka.
Yes.
You know, when that distinction between the wakeful state and dream state blurs. When that dream which he has is so very graphic, so very descriptive, and as you're saying that the time spent in that dream was so very real, that he says, my God, I don't know which is real, this is real or that is real, right? And I mean, it makes you wonder, right now, am I dreaming this?
Exactly. If this in a space thing. Of a few seconds, a person can like dream of maybe 10 or 15 years of life, it's very much plausible that we're dreaming our own existence right now. And Swami says precisely that, you know. And Swami says even one creates oneself during one's dreams, right? Even that person that is there is created by you. Right?
In fact, I think in the previous series, 1990 series, when Swami was talking about Chitta, Swami was mentioning this, you know, the Chitta is the one which stores the impressions over many, many lifetimes. You know, it's almost like a hard disk kind of a thing. And the other role which it does is it constantly tries to connect everything that it experiences, you know, the individual experiences within some framework which is already there. Right? It does not let you, I mean, and we see that even in our everyday life.
Right.
We always want to grasp with our mind what we see.
Yes.
Right? And what we have not understood is not ours. It's almost like that. You're always trying to come to terms and fit into some concept which is already there.
Absolutely.
Right? Even when you're listening to a discourse, as I heard one talk, and complete talk on the art of listening. Right? And he said, we never listen because we are always trying to fit in whatever we hear into concepts which we already have.
Already know. Yeah.
And he said, that's never listening. And when you do that, you always are filtering out concepts. You're losing some. And, you know, some discourses which I have sat through physically, Swami is delivering and I'm sitting there. And now when I listen to it, it really surprises you. How did we miss so much?
How did we miss so much?
Because, you know, we have this, Swami would say that you come to me with a small receptacle and that's all you can fill it with. And you realize that, you know, there has been a torrent here and you've had a very, very tiny vessel and so much is lost. And that's precisely because of this, because we are trying to constantly fit into our understanding, our conceptions, what is coming to us in this experience or whatever we are listening.
I've had that experience right here, Prem. Like even when we are discussing live discourse, that we hear some part of the discourse, and then when you speak about something that you gleaned from that discourse, for some time, believe me, the first few sentences when you speak about it, I'm almost thinking like, is he speaking about the same thing that I heard a few minutes ago?
And I feel that many, many times when you are saying something.
Yeah, it's like we missed, what he said. It's like I missed an entire section and I'm having this text in my hand and I go back and I see to my surprise, yes, Swami has spoken about it. You know, it's like our, as you said, our listening, general awareness, our attention span is really so less, right? It's mind-boggling.
Like, you said this many times before. The program's name is Shravanam Mananam Nididhyasanam. One Swami was telling a student or I don't know a devotee. He said Shravanam Mananam, Shravanam, and then Mananam. Don't do Mananam when you are doing Shravanam.
Oh. Fantastic.
Right?
Yes.
And that's precisely what it is. You know, all the time we are thinking, and even in the other discussion which I have with Arvind, I keep telling him that, you know, many times you have to silence your mind to listen.
Yes.
You know, you literally say that, shut up and listen. Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Because otherwise, especially when you're in a conversation, in a program like this, I'm constantly thinking of what I can add, what I can, you know, add to enhance the conversation or, you know, carry forward the conversation. Yeah. In the process, you miss so much. You miss so much of listening that happens.
Absolutely. Right? No, Swami is also mentioning this, that I think we should take this allegory right back into our life, right? That one, Swami so profoundly says, one also creates others and the environment and undergoes illusory experiences. Now think about our everyday life, right? Even let's look at our own parents, our spouses, our children, right? If we go by this fact that we have created them, not so much, not in the, you know, like a, let's not talk about ourselves as a creator, we've created that being. But the way that person is, that person's personality, it's completely our narrative about that person. It may, they may not even be that particular person we've conceived them to be.
You know,
but for us it is them, and then we interact with that version of that particular person, and as Swami points out, we undergo so many illusory experiences right after that.
Yeah. There's this very, very beautiful and profound story I read just a couple of days back. You know, there is this monk who is trying to meditate and reach the highest state of peace or whatever. So he sits at home and meditates. There's too much noise around. He's not able to. Then he goes to a monastery and too many people walking around. He's not able to. So he's trying different places and nothing seems to work. So much of disturbance everywhere.
Right.
So what he does, he hires a boat, right? And he starts rowing and he goes right into the middle of the lake. And nobody is around. There's nobody, you know, coming around, and absolutely peaceful. He sits there and meditates. And he's in real joy of meditating, and he's in peace. Just then, somebody comes and bangs their boat with his boat. Right? And he's really disturbed. He's pissed off mighty. And, you know, he's just about to open and blast the person who's come and disturbed his meditation. Right? And he opens his eyes and sees it's an empty boat which has drifted away from the bank.
Right.
Okay. And the story goes, at that moment he attains realization. The realization that he gets is, all boats are empty.
Oh, fantastic. Right?
What a beautiful thing. He says, all the noise which I was facing all through, they were all empty boats.
Right.
The disturbance and the peace came only from within.
Perfect. Perfect.
So as you were saying, that we are creating people in our life. I mean, what Swami said in this discourse, that you're creating yourself and you're creating people around you. And with that, the disturbance, the anger, the fear, and all of that is born out of these empty boats.
Yeah, I remember, you know, as you were saying this, it's a very, very beautiful concept, what you said. And I recall one person, you know, he is into this training and development. He was telling me this, that they are coached this way, that when they are addressing their participants, one thing that they have to keep telling themselves is that there is no one out there. So when I first heard it, I thought that, wow, that's a really beautiful thing, because, you know, say I imagine myself that if I have to speak in Kulwant Hall and I see the sea of 15,000 faces looking at me, if I could trick my mind into saying that there's no one out there, then I would give the most, you know, like a speech where I would not be conscious, I would not be scared, stiff, as I normally would be. Then I realized, but that's not what they're talking about. What he clarified, that what they meant is that when you look at the people in the audience, their reactions, you know, their body language, what you are reading is what totally what you have created. So and you are responding to that. So if you can bring it back to that, there's really no one out there.
I think it's a good concept in many ways. Especially they say, you know, the when they rated the fears that man goes through and prioritize them based on what is the maximum scariest thing which people undergo. Public speaking was the most scariest thing. Death only got the second spot. Right? Yeah. So if it works for public speaking, I'm sure it works for everything, right?
Totally it does, totally it does. Yeah.
I think we'll have to conclude with that. Dear listeners, thank you very much for being with us. And I think the two clips which we played of this discourse would have given you an idea of what is coming in this discourse. It's a very, very beautiful discourse like the previous ones. And we are excited to go into it. But you'll have to wait till next week for that. So do join us again next week on the next episode of Shravanam Mananam Nididhyasanam. And so we most humbly offer this effort at Swami's Lotus Feet. In a short while from now, you'll be joined by Brother Bishu with the next segment and the last segment of the day, Outside, Inside, Deep Inside. Thank you once again for being with us. Happy listening.